Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Sight Side, the podcast where we discuss applied neurodivergence in the workplace and in life. My name is James Hickey. I am an ADHD, that's autism and ADHD professional, and your host. Today, we have a very special guest, and I'm very excited to introduce her to all of you. Cammie Turcotte is the Senior Director of Supplier Inclusion at Disability Inn, an organization dedicated to advancing disability inclusion worldwide across the workplace, the supply chain, and in the marketplace. Cammie oversees their DOBE program, that's the Disability-Owned Business Enterprise Certification, and the entire network of certified businesses behind it. I met Cammie after my consulting company, Pathways Collective, received the DOBE certification, and I became part of their network. She's brilliant, engaging, and an all-around amazing human being. Cammie, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, and why don't you jump in and tell everyone a little bit about yourself and your role over at Disability Inn.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me today, James. Happy to be here. Cammie Turcotte, let's see, in a nutshell, I am a mom to two teenage boys or young men. I have currently three dogs, love working out, being outdoors, very active person, and just overall kind of carrier of kindness, if you will, is the theme I like to take with my life. A little bit about me professionally. I've been with Disability Inn since January 2012. So a lot of the work I've done, I've really grown into professionally. When I started with the organization, this program was just being piloted. So we only had like 10 or 15 businesses at the time that were identified and certified. So I've very much grown with the program. There are businesses that have been with us since the beginning. So I've known them for over a decade. And it's become a very close personal and professional network for me. My role itself, as you stated, is to really work with our stakeholder groups. So that's our disability-owned business enterprises, as well as our corporate partners, to make sure that they are both plugged in to really leverage the resources we offer for both groups. So in some contexts, that means making sure that our disability-owned business enterprises are tied in to connect with our corporate partners and vice versa. Other times, it may be just helping our corporate partners look for DOBEs, right? Or help our DOBEs really kind of fine tune some of their business skill sets. So I do a lot of things. I wear several hats, but I rolled into this leadership role just over a year ago. So I've been leading the program since April of last year, and it's been phenomenal. And I'm really kind of trying to take a holistic approach to the changes and the evolution of the program by listening to what our stakeholders need from us and want from us, and trying to bring those things to the table and provide those to them.
Okay, absolutely. No, I agree. I love, participating in some of the DOBE activities. You know, I know that you're really, really on point with a lot of the webinars, and you're right. There are some interesting, resources available for people who might not, are getting new to the business world. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff for newer, especially I like how a lot of it is small business focused, which is, fantastic. It's really, really good to be a part of it. So I wanted to ask you, Cam, how did you find your way into this work? What was the path that brought you, supplier inclusion is your focus. What was, how did you get here?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's probably going to be in kind of an even sillier response, for lack of a better word. My position at my last firm I was working at was kind of being done with. And I had two young kids at the time. I had a spouse at the time that had a very demanding career. And so I needed something that was kind of flexible, that I had a little bit of balance with work and life. And I interviewed for a role with Disability Inn. At the time was US Business Leadership Network, and ended up kind of doing a hybrid job with them, where I was working from home a few days a week, in office a few days a week, doing a lot of the work in supplier inclusion that I'm now doing at a very much smaller scale, as well as kind of wearing several other hats. At that time, our organization was very small and is not anywhere near the behemoth that it's become today in 2026. So it was just something that kind of happenstance. But I've obviously been in this, this position or this department for almost 15 years now. So it really is a part of me and my life and who I am as a person.
I love that word behemoth. That's how, we're growing even more. I mean, it's really, that's exciting. Yeah. So what was it like to sit on the sidelines and just be like involved in watching the growth of this? You went from a handful of businesses to, in your own words, a behemoth.
Yeah.
During this time, did you realize that you guys were doing something really special, like making an actual impact?
I think we did. I don't think that I or anybody else recognized, kind of the cliff that we were about to fall off of once we were at that cliff. So I think there were a lot of signs that was moving in that direction. It didn't happen fast. It did not happen overnight, but We went through a rebrand about 10 years ago, or maybe it was 8 years ago, to what we are now, which is Disability In or Disability IN, and really kind of focused in on our vision and mission of what we wanted to do and how we wanted to be represented in the business space and what was important to our stakeholders. And so I think that why we expected it to happen when we were there at that cliff and it was about to happen, it was kind of a, oh dear, here we are. Okay, everybody, hold on to your pants because we're going over. But it's been fantastic. It's been amazing to see our team grow, the programs grow. When I started, there were, I think, we had a workforce-based program and supplier inclusion. We were just getting ready to launch what is now Inclusion Works. And our index, I think, started 2 years later. So there's been so much change and it's been phenomenal. And it, you know, obviously we can't do it without our stakeholders, our team, and the people that support us. But it's been a great ride, and I'm looking forward to seeing where things go for the next 10, 15 years.
Right. It's absolutely amazing. Okay, so I did want to ask, like you over the last decade or so that you've been involved in this, how has your life changed? I mean, you went from one job, jumped into this. Since you got into the space, can you share with us a little bit about your personal journey, like how your life has changed, and what I'm really interested to hear, like what do you see now that you didn't see before? Like what how has your worldview changed? Like if you could, if you go back to Cami a decade ago versus where you are today. Tell us a little bit about that evolution.
I think you know, before I started with Disability In, I don't think that I saw people with disabilities as people with disabilities, right? I had an uncle who had a very and I'll frame this up to explain what I
We're
mean
not
by
real
that.
people.
I saw them as real people. I didn't see them as something as an exclusion to the human race. I had an uncle who had a brain injury and was confined to a wheelchair due to an accident. And his life was changed dramatically. I spent lots of time with him during the week. But to me, that was just my uncle. It wasn't that he was a wheelchair user, that he had a disability, that he had cognitive functions that weren't there anymore, that were there when I was young. So I think once I started working for the organization and I had more access to people with disabilities, and I kind of saw this different shift in the way that the disabilities kind of are, right, are present in the world we live in. I think for me, I started to see more of the gaps where things were not provided for folks that necessarily needed them in a day-to-day experience. So if I was to go to the store and there was not a button to push, like it was like, okay, well, how does somebody that's a little person or somebody who cannot use their arms access to get in the store, right? So things like that, I think I started noticing more. And I think also just the sheer, for me, with entrepreneurs that I work with, the sheer like innovation and resilience that they have as a group of individuals is just, it's beyond anything I could ever imagine. There's such an incredible group of folks that I don't think get enough kudos for the work they do. So I think there's been a couple different shifts in frames, but overall, I think it's just for me, I notice it more. I notice the gaps more. I'm aware more of what's going on in the world around me, just from an awareness on how people treat one another and how the world is accessible to some people, but not necessarily to everybody.
Absolutely. Well, as when I was inviting you on here, we've obviously had several meetings talking about neurodivergence and it how it works in the how it acts in the workplace, and that's one of the reasons why I started this podcast. The site side, we're built around the idea of applied neurodivergence, which is treating neurodivergent cognition as an operational asset instead of a liability. Because so much when I entered this space, almost everything was about the accommodation side of it, and almost no one was talking about our abilities. And I'm like, this is really, this is a substantial part of the conversation that I feel is, the missing piece. So I want to ask, from your seat, how does neurodivergence fit inside the broader disability conversation?
So, I mean, for me, I'm immersed in this world on a daily basis, pretty much. So, for me, it's just like any other disability. I will say that obviously, being an invisible disability, if you're walking down the street and you see somebody who is a wheelchair user or is blind and is using a cane or, a sight dog, you're obviously going to, note the fact that they probably have a disability of some sort. Whereas, another huge group of folks, whether it's they're falling in the neurodivergent community or they may have a learning disability or something that affects their day to day that you can't see, is just as important and prevalent as somebody that has a mobility or physical disability. So for me, I think it has, just as much room because of the sheer amount of folks that it impacts. But it doesn't necessarily, it's not more or less than anybody else's. I think that disabilities across the board are important and they should all have an equal seat. So the discussion in the broader disability community, as far as workplace is concerned, I totally hear everything you're saying, and I'm gonna kind of address some of those in a minute, but I think that right now it's really at the forefront of a lot of the work that's being done around disability in the workforce.
Right. I think it's someone, I'm ADHD, autism and ADHD. And when it comes to workplace interactions, my biggest struggles have been the kind of offstage moments, not necessarily doing the work. The technical side we're fantastic at. It's just I don't know how to, I would always say weird things in the break room. I would get into I have like conversation trees, right? And it would and if I start to go off script, I will start info dumping about whatever my current special interest is. And it's not as socially acceptable. So it's I was late diagnosed, so I figured out how to be high masking a lot of times. For example, I got really into and this is a great tip, is I'm not a big sports person, but neurotypical people love that. So I got into the NFL because it's the shortest season. Okay, I don't have the
Oh,
attention span
we'll have
for
to talk during football season here in a few short
I
months.
don't I don't have the I don't have the attention span for baseball or basketball. It's too long of a season. NFL was 16 games, now it's 17 games. It's not a lot to it's a very low informational bar of entry, and it would give me like a little packet of questions. Plus, I'm from Cleveland and the Browns suck. So it's like there's always, and I never understood. See, this is another thing I was trying to figure out why people are into that, because it's like, why do you cheer for a team when you just know you're going to get pissed off every Sunday? Why do you put, get emotionally involved in something out of your control? But they like talking about it. So I would try to come up with these little, socially acceptable cheat codes almost to be able to get past those soft moments in like the break room or in the parking lot or different areas where you're getting, that way, like the stop and chat isn't as terrifying to me. So it would be so soft skills, but contrast that to someone who might be a let's say they're wheelchair bound and they have a great personality. They're affable people, they're able to speak with authority on a variety of subjects. Everyone loves them, and it's like they might have the physical disability, the visible one, yet they have no problem navigating these social situations that it would be adjacent, to the workplace. So I think it's awesome what you guys do is have us all sit at the same table. And it doesn't matter if we're going to info dump about weird things, that we're always going to be, always going to have a seat at that table, which is freaking, I think it's amazing. I really do.
Love it.
Yeah, I really do. So one thing I did want to ask is when you see, different organizations, because I know you guys are plugged into basically everyone. I was going through the vendor portal, and it's just like so many different, companies on here. Fortune 500 companies, Fortune 100 companies, Fortune 50 companies. Like there's really big names who are involved. When you look at how these organizations currently approach neurodivergent employees, vendors, business owners, what do you see that's working right now? And what do you see that might be, you might want to see a little more improvement?
So I think that when we look at this, for me at least, I think it's a part of being inclusive and understanding where the role or the position collides with the human being, right? So these two things are merging together because that's part of how life works, and really having a larger understanding of like how people show up authentically, right? So if somebody has ADHD or whether they're a wheelchair user, they're going to need some accommodation more than likely of some sort, right? So understanding what that looks like and sounds like on an authentic level, so that they're able to come to work and bring their best version of themselves. To me, that lends itself to being a more efficient and successful employee, which in turn makes the business more efficient and successful. So for me, like I think there are a lot of organizations that are trying really hard to do that, to meet the employee where they are, so that they can provide the services they need or the accommodations they need, so that they do have that successful outcome. They're able to be authentic at work and bring themselves 110% to work. As far as what's not, I think that like in life, you're always going to run into some people that just refuse to kind of see something that's in front of them. You're going to tell them the sky's blue and they're going to say it's purple. And you can sit there and argue with them till they're blue in the face. They're just not going to get it. But I think that's just part of the human race and the society we live in. And so I think that you're going to see some of that unwillingness to really kind of be open to understanding somebody else's lived experience versus what your lived experience is. But again, I don't think that's a widespread thing, specifically around employment. I think that's just human, unfortunately, human behavior.
I agree, and it's that's something that I have noticed. You know, since I've come into this neurodivergent space, I've noticed even a change over these last few months. You kind of touched on it when you were sharing your personal story about your uncle and him, you know, being wheelchair bound. I've noticed that when it comes to neurodivergence, especially with more and more people becoming, you know, diagnosed, adults as late diagnosed, but even children are coming on. When anyone has like a personal skin in the game, so to speak, like they have a, you know, a grandchild, for instance, or a, you know, brother, anyone who comes into this, suddenly they're a lot more open to it. And we've seen so much more support come in, you know, and that at that point, they're willing to, you know, really willing to take a look at what the landscape looks like for neurodivergence in adulthood. Because that's something that so many services and a lot of just the general you know, care focus is for you know, minors, anyone under 18. But once they, you know, once they graduate and they're out and they're looking at joining the workforce, we're starting to see a little bit more structure in place. And that's one of the things that I absolutely love about Dobie. So that's what I wanted to, you know, we're gonna lead right into our next segment with that. For listeners,
Can I share just
oh
one
my,
fun
yeah,
little fact with you? I
jump
think this will
in.
kind of help level set off with just what you were sharing. So, like, one of the new pieces of research found that by 2040, which is what a short 14 years away, 40% of professionals will identify as neurodivergent. So
We're taking
they say that
over.
they already know that 53% of Gen Z who are entering the workforce now identify as neurodivergent. So that means that workplaces are going to be forced to adjust and adapt and welcome this group of people in with open arms, or they're not going to have a workforce. So I would think that's, like, to me, like, that is a stat that is hugely impact the work that we're not only that we're doing, but that the companies we work with are going to be doing in the near future if they're not doing it yet.
That is amazing. I didn't know we were taking over that much. 40%. Wow,
That's
that's
why I
pretty
wanted to squeeze in.
incredible.
I'm like, I got to share this because this looked like exactly
Well,
based on what you just said. That is so, like, critical to everything that's going on.
that's amazing. Yeah, I know it's more and more, but it's I one thing I do you know, I have to reference in some of my work is the JP Morgan 2022 Autism Work Study, which really shows what we're capable of when it comes to ability when we're properly accommodated.
Of course.
And I love, I think that that's just such a, and this again ties back to applied neurodivergence, that it is such an important part of the conversation. Because, like, I mean, let's face it, if you come in and you're like trying to get a job somewhere and you walk in and you sit down in front of a hiring manager and you have a laundry list of accommodations and you lead with that, like it or not, you know, it's human nature. It's gonna raise a red flag. They're gonna look at that as a, you know, liability. And that's just how, this is how it is. It's not right, but it is, you know, people are gonna people, right? But if you could come in with this, you know, your accommodations, and you're also capable of producing 140% higher than a neurotypical counterpart while making fewer errors, that's a massive, you know, return on investment. And, you know, the ROI. And it's like, and even where like some accommodations, it can, well, one of my big worries for people entering this is dealing with microaggressions in the workspace, which is where, you know, you have, let's say Jimmy is really good at, you know, numbers. He's sitting over there crunching spreadsheets and he has his noise canceling headphones on because that's his ADA mandated accommodation. Meanwhile, the company handbook and their policy has no headphones on the floor. So all the other workers are like, well, why does he get special treatment? And then even if it's a, you know, needed accommodation, at the same time, it's going to lead to resentment and that's going to open the door for microaggressions. So I think it's, you know, as well as, you know, not only like leadership needs to understand about how, you know, accommodations help us perform, but also like how everyone can work together as a team too.
And I would say to that, like, honestly, as far as interviewing and with accommodations, I think just like this is how I compare it to in some small way is a lot of times when working with business owners, the first thing they want to shout from the mountaintops is they are a disability-owned business enterprise. Love that. Love everything about it. Love they're bringing authentic selves to the table. However, if they're starting to pitch to a company and that's the first thing out of their mouth, that's not necessarily a reason that a company would do business with you, right? So why not lead with all the fantastic things that your company is doing? So the same thing, if you're going for an employment position and you're going in an interview, yeah, absolutely the accommodations are important, but maybe leading with some of the things you've done critically at past positions or things that you like excel at. And then, oh, by the way, like these are some things that help me be successful. Not everybody's gonna be able to do that, right? Because To be fair, like it's a little nerve-wracking for folks when they're in an interview to begin with, regardless of what your disability is or isn't. So kind of bringing that to the table authentically in that discussion is very difficult. But I think if you can share with people the bonuses of hiring you or working with you first, it kind of softens the blow, for lack of a better term, when you're talking about the things that you need to be successful. And I think that I don't think that's just tied to disability. I think that's just tied to being a human in general, because we tend to see the pragmatic things versus the things that really like matter, right? In the bigger picture, right? So for me, I think those things are kind of they're hard to do, but if you can find those successful ways to like tie in like how fabulous you are at the beginning of the interview or in the pitch, how great your company is doing and what you're selling and pitching, like it makes the other potential challenges that are going to pop up later in conversation a little bit easier, a little bit softer to kind of take in. But that's kind of the way I frame it up with our business owners. And then I think is a little bit more beneficial to folks. It doesn't make them feel so uncomfortable right out the gates.
Right. No, I agree. It's and especially in this day and age with like 2026, it is technology has advanced to such a point where it is a lot of accommodations that would be needed are almost negligible. I mean, unless you're looking at like serious like infrastructure changes. For example, like there was and this is just I was meeting with another Dobie in the Columbus area last week, and we were actually talking about this. They had visited a historic building that wasn't as accessible because it was like a and it would for the amount of construction that it would take to be able to do this, it would actually wreck how wreck something like that. But that's a literally a relic of the past. Like these days, I mean, outside of like extreme infrastructure changes, most accommodations are negligible. I would say
Absolutely.
negligible. It's just like minor things, noise canceling headphones, ambient light. It's not that big. You're not making
Right.
major concessions. But one thing I did want to get into is for any of our listeners who have never ever heard of a disability-owned business enterprise. And this is big. As I told you, I was at the Slowdown Summit a couple weeks ago, and I was at a leadership conference for introverts and neurodivergent business leaders, just leadership in general. And I ran into a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs who were on the spectrum. And it none of them had heard of it. I believe I was the only Dobie there. None of them have heard of it. So I found myself in almost kind of an ambassador position a little bit, and I was that's another reason why I wanted to ask you on the show and have you come on, because it's really while it's a major part, disability and Dolby and everything, not everyone knows about it. It really I didn't even hear about it. I had to do I was doing some deep searching before I came on, and then I ended up setting everything in motion. So I'd love to hear like what is a disability-owned enterprise? What does the certification actually do? And with this, what makes an enterprise disability owned?
That's a great question, James. And listen, we are kind of we've always been known as I always like to say the best kept secret. I don't know how, I mean, we have hundreds of thousands of people who know who we are now, but that's kind of a drop in the bucket for the human race on the globe when you look at sheer numbers. But just to frame this up for your viewers, your listeners, Adobe is really defined as a business that's owned, operated, managed, and controlled by a person or persons with a disability or disabilities. It has to be a for-profit entity currently. And they need to be headquartered in the country where they reside, where they're a citizen of. And that's not just the US. We do certify outside the US, even though it is a much smaller scale of what we're currently doing. But that's effectively Adobe. Now, the certification itself is really a tool in your toolkit as a business owner. It allows you, access, benefits, resources to which business owners like yourself, you can leverage based on where you think your priorities as a business owner currently are, because we do offer a lot, and not everybody has the bandwidth to attend every event, every webinar, every resource we have. So, you can use this certification as a business owner to leverage, things like how to do business with larger entities and corporations, how to partner up with fellow Dobies and other small business owners, and really kind of to just dig into to honing in on some of your skills as a business owner that maybe aren't as firm as you would like them. Now, we don't have the tools to provide everything from A to Z, but we do try to lock in on specific things we think are critical for our business owners that are part of our network. And certification, while it's great and it's amazing, and I'd like to think that we run a great show, it doesn't guarantee business, right? But it does provide a seat at the table for business owners who typically wouldn't have the opportunity to engage in that type of environment and to compete against certain other companies for specific business opportunities. So it is something that, has evolved over a number of years because it did start out of the civil rights movement. And, disability is kind of the last frontier, for lack of a better term. So for us, I love seeing the program grow as much as it has, but we always have, unique challenges that are coming up. And so we're always looking for ways to evolve and support you guys. But, for us, the certification program is really just an evolution of business owners that are coming in to hopefully engage and get involved and really kind of leverage what we can offer, whether it's our network resources or our relationships.
Right. It was yeah, people were asking you like, how do I, you know, how they're like, how do I sign up? I'm like, well, it's not sign up so much as apply. And the application
Right.
process was a little
Arduous.
I'm not gonna say I don't have a very high tolerance for bureaucracy. It wasn't because someone they asked, they're like, well, what do I need? I'm like, everything. I'm like, they want everything you have, any
Yes.
document you have related to your business, send it. Just everything they want it all.
Yeah.
One thing I did, as I mentioned, I found myself a little bit in a, you know, almost an ambassador state, like explaining what was going on with it. What is the organization doing right now to maybe raise your profile with new and emerging disability-owned businesses? Especially with this wave of, you know, like you said, 40% of the workforce is going to be neurodivergent. With this wave of late diagnosed individuals who are coming in and realize they've been disabled their entire lives.
Right.
And you know they're looking for support. This is a great example of it because, like you know, like we know, there's not a whole lot of post high school level support for adults with
Right.
neurodivergence.
Right.
You guys are a major pillar in that, though, especially for entrepreneurs. What are you guys doing to raise your profile?
Yeah, so to be fair, most of what we do, at least in the certification program, really comes through word of mouth. So I thought it was really amazing that you said you kind of felt like an ambassador, because that's what our Adobe's typically feel like. If they're embedded in the work we're doing and they're involved and engaged, they're going to shout from the rooftops about the program and kind of try to share as much as they can. So I would say most of it is word of mouth with our program. Now, not that I'm going to get deep into the weeds on this, but we do have a next gen program that works with college juniors, seniors, or those that are recent graduates on internships and mentorships. And a lot of times these folks end up working into positions where they end up getting job offers out of it. So there is some younger groups that are kind of, again, coming into the workforce from that. But for the entrepreneurs, most of what we do is word of mouth. I will say, we have a lot of strategic partnerships with other organizations that do what we do around certification, multiple channels around marketing that we do for specific events. So we don't necessarily focus on a specific group of disabilities. We welcome all different types of business owners, and if they feel like they might be a fit and they meet the criteria, we're going to welcome them with open arms. So again, a lot of what we do is word of mouth, and then strategically through specific marketing channels, social media, obviously. And then we attend conferences and expos as well, and then speak on panels. So it's probably not what everybody assumes it is, at least for our program. But our CEO and president, as well as our leadership team, are constantly attending events and speaking on panels and doing educational trainings and things like that. So we do a lot of stuff. It's just not always in the traditional channels of how people would think we're marketing.
Absolutely. And I hear you on the word of mouth. And one thing I do want to emphasize is dope. It's like once you're in, you're in. Like it's really I have gotten so much support from fellow Dobies and just like it is kind of like a family.
Yep.
Because we all I guess we all have that shared experience of you know, living life, you know, disabled, you know, differently abled and having to you know, overcome hardship in our own way. One thing though is it is another thing I like about the Dobie family is it's we're all go-getters. Like
Oh yeah.
entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, or people who, you know, you can either, you know, talk about it or be about it. And it's a lot of people who are being about it, you know, despite their, you know, I mean, you know, handicaps, despite being disabled, we're still stepping up, which I think is it's such a wonderful environment. One thing I did want to ask you, so any of our listeners who are, you know, disabled, not necessarily neurodivergent, you know, I understand disability and covers all disabilities.
Yes.
Anyone who's hearing about Dobie for the first time, what would you say is the best on-ramp? Avenues that you would point them towards if they wanted to get involved.
Yeah, so I'd probably point them to our website first, or schedule time for a conversation myself or Heather Coburn, who co-leads the program with me, to really understand like how certification works, right? Because we're talking about for-profit entities that have to be majority owned, operated, managed, and controlled. Now, that's not going to be a fit for every company that comes to us, right? Some companies right out the gates will have to give majority ownership or at least partnership 50-50 for capital or whatever reasons they need, right? So understanding A, what the criteria and parameters are, and then doing a little bit of research, understanding like, who they are as a business owner. Are they starting up? Are they established? Like, do what they need assistance with or what they need to leverage a certification. Is it a fit for their company? If they're doing fantastic and they really don't need any of our resources, but maybe they want help connecting with businesses in corporate America, we can help with that. But that's going to be a very small piece of what we offer versus a firm who may need help with A through F on the alphabet of different things that, they need to function their business with. So say understanding where you are as a business owner to understand, do you want to just be part of a larger community? Fabulous. Come on in. We would love to have you. And then, again, understanding what we offer and if it's a fit and if they, have an interest in utilizing those types of resources and benefits. Because we obviously don't want to have somebody go through the whole process, pay the $300 fee, come on board, get onboarded. And then they're like, well, I don't need any of these resources. I love being a part of the community, but I don't need any of this. So it's framed up differently for each person based on what they're looking to get out of it.
Right. Again, like the actual application process, it was easy. The portal's easy. You could just, register, and it's I like that I didn't have to do it all at once. A lot of it, and as I was going through, I know a lot of it was you guys were concerned about funding, like how's the business funded? And thankfully mine, I bootstrapped myself. I didn't have investors or anything, but I understand that it was any I, one thing I've noticed is anytime as soon as money gets involved, it complicates things. That's where like that documentation, compliance, all these different things start to come into play. So I did I, fortunately for myself, but I can't I can't speak for anyone. I had a I had a lower I feel like a lower bar to entry with that because again I just self-funded. But there's other people who might might struggle a little bit. And so I wanted to ask you if it gets into like let's say someone is a business owner, they come in and they're on paper have it, but their brother-in-law loaned them the money and it was a personal loan. And they're not able to produce the bank paperwork that says this is how I how I did it. Is there an avenue for explaining that or how would you guys approach it?
So we do allow letters of explanation for or I would say just documentation in general. So if this was like a family loan, I would say that they could probably get a letter written up and get it notarized saying that he loaned him X amount. This is what he's paid off. This is what he owes. You could frame it up however you need to. What I will say is one of the red flags when we have applicants come in is really, again, it's that ownership management and control. And what I think folks don't always understand is that's going to be laid out in several different pieces of documentation that you're required to submit. So that's going to be everything from business structure documents, so bylaws, operating agreements, to things like financials, so tax returns, promissory notes, any type of transfer of ownership, if there has been a shift in ownership, or if you bought it from somebody or it's been gifted to you. So that all kind of needs to tie out effectively, and it really kind of just needs to be like a giant puzzle. All the pieces have to fit together. And if they don't, our committee is going to do their due diligence to try and get a clear picture of what's going on by asking the applicant for further and additional information or ask some additional questions. We're not in the business of turning people away just to turn them away. We're going to try and work with them to see if we can clarify the situation. But at the end of the day, we are held to a standard and procedure. That's not just built up by us. It's the standard across certification when we talk about third-party certification. We are going to try to work with them to clarify what's going on and see if they meet the criteria or not. We're not just going to shut them down unless it's like on paper that they are 50-50 owners and somebody who doesn't have a disability owns the other half of the business and they don't have majority control. There's nothing we can do about that, unfortunately.
Right. For anyone listening, if this sounds like a big, hassle, it might sound like it, but they do it. There's a method to the madness because I understand you guys do a very, very extensive third-party vetting process, and that's why so many of these, large corporations and companies work with you, and that's what kind of gives the Dolby certification that gravitas because they understand that hey, you went through this very, very, nitpicky process. And it is, you guys dig pretty deep. So let's talk about the other side, where it is the actual disabled part. And when this part came up, because you have to prove not only are you, the funding and everything on pay, the paperwork, but you also have to dive into the actual disability part. And for me, I sent everything. I sent my entire assessment for my psychologist. I said I had a letter from because I work with the I have a caseworker with the OOD, the Office of Ohioans with Disabilities. So my eligibility letter, I sent that in too because I just figured, ship it, send it all. And it worked. Obviously, it was it worked. I got it. But what would you say to someone? What is your threshold of what you're looking for? So, because I know that you kind of toe the line, and we involve like HIPAA and all these other regulations. What is your like? How does it? Can you explain that process just a little bit?
Around the disability documentation. So what we've tried to do over the course of the program is to alleviate as many barriers as we can. And we've realized that for some people with disabilities, especially if they have cognitive and visible disabilities, the process in itself can be a little arduous. We fully get that and respect that. That's why we try to work with most of our applicants is as in-depth as we're allowed to from the team standpoint. When it comes to the disability documentation, we typically have, I think, 5 to 6 different options. And the reason we have this is because not every disability fits in every hole, right? So, like, you can't put a square peg in a round hole and vice versa. Somebody who has a learning disability isn't necessarily going to be able to have a physician's form, which is kind of like a templated form we offer where we talk about diagnosis, prognosis. And then a doctor or medical professional has to sign and attest that they're telling the truth about that individual. But somebody with a learning disability isn't going to be able to leverage that, right? They're going to have to use their IEP or their, I guess, what is a 504 now from their time in school to present that. That's acceptable because it's considered a government piece of paper, right? So it's legally, it's admissible. The physician's form that I was mentioning is, or I think it's verification physicians, a verification form. I apologize, the name has shifted a little bit over the years. Is really kind of the form that most folks use because you can take it to a psychiatrist, an MD, a DO, any type of medical professional can complete it and submit it in, or you submit it in. And it's really kind of just giving us the bare minimum information because our committee is not comprised of doctors. But what they are looking to understand is the impact that it has on your day-to-day life. Right. So this prognosis, diagnosis, and asking how it impacts your day-to-day life is what the committee is looking for, right? I will say very forthright and transparently, we are not looking to dig into people's disabilities, but legally we have to show that we have documentation that a person does have a disability. So it's not about digging into it and try to be invasive and, go into the whole HIPAA space because that's not the end game. The end game is just to say, okay, if God forbid something came back and we were challenged that this person didn't have a disability or didn't own the business, that we had the legal documentation to show, well, they submitted XYZ ABC. So legally standing, they are, and they have a disability as far as the ADA is concerned, as far as we're concerned. So that's really the onus for it. So I hope that helps. I hope that makes people feel a little bit better because we're not looking to dig into people's medical histories. We don't want to dig into to privacy laws or anything like that, but legally we do have to like have documentation around every single thing that we're basically trying to show fits the criteria.
Absolutely. Well, again, it's a deep vetting process.
Yeah.
So it's I understand why you do it. It's just I just wanted to make sure where just any listeners who are maybe leery about how they would
Yeah.
disclose that.
Yeah.
Because it
We don't need
is
medical records and we don't want them.
Okay. No worries.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to jump forward a little bit. So let's talk about the current landscape right now. And this is something we shared a little bit in our one-on-ones that we've had. But I want to ask, because I know you're plugged into a lot of places. I know you got a lot of irons in the fire, and you're like, kind of the central terminal, Grand Central, when it comes to everything. What do you see is the biggest challenge facing neurodivergent business owners right now? Where would you say the biggest friction is?
Yeah, so in all honesty, I don't think it's just neurodivergent business owners. I think it's all business owners. I think we are currently in a very hyper chaotic world where things are changing, not just every day, every week, every month in the business world, right? Not just in the world, in the business world where a lot of these folks are operating. And there are many businesses that are really just struggling to stay afloat, right? The margins are significantly smaller and it's extremely competitive. I think from a neurodivergent standpoint, some of the things that maybe they may be struggling with specifically right now is being able to fit within those margins, right? Understand how to navigate those margins and do it in a way that works for them. right? Because for most neurodivergent people, they don't necessarily live their life the same way somebody who's blind does, right? It's very apples and oranges. So for me, I think that's kind of where the biggest challenges or friction is right now.
Oh wow, that's a really good point. So that's the neurodivergent side of it. When you look at disabled business owners more broadly, beyond just ND specifically, how much of that experience overlaps? Is it the same friction, or would you say it's a different set of challenges?
Yeah, so again, kind of tapping back into just what I said, like it's so hyper chaotic and competitive that there's this huge overlap of companies that are all in these marginalized markets
Right.
that are trying to all fight for the same business, right?
Right.
So I think finding the right solutions that they can provide, understanding how those fit into potential clients, and understanding that there's a timing literally to everything when it comes to working with large corporations or government entities, they're on a cycle. Everything is going to come up for renew eventually. So
Right.
you may be trying to pitch somebody tomorrow for something that they're not even going to focus on for another 18 months because the contract cycle is not due for 3 years. So I think understanding and asking the right questions and having those conversations when you have the opportunities to say, like, I understand that I may or may not be a fit for your company. Should I be following up? And if I should, like, when should I follow up? Is this
Right.
something I should be reaching out in 6 months, a year and a half? And just really kind of understanding how that framework of the contract cycles, because that's going to help, especially for folks who are neurodivergent, that get hyper focused on things. It's going to help them bridge the gap to be successful if they can say, okay, well, I don't have to reach back out to that person for 6 months. I'm going to ticker that. Put it on my calendar and I'm moving on to the next thing, right? So
Absolutely.
I think that asking the hard questions sometimes provides a lot of valuable text and context to somebody so that they can kind of, okay, I'm going to table this, I'll come back to it, I'm on to the next thing. So I really feel like that's kind of where right now where a lot of the challenges are kind of understanding the overarching theme of A, where they fit in and when the timing is right, and like what are the steps they should be taking to kind of get there at that point in time.
Absolutely. So would you, because I know there's so much overlap with it. And again, like I touched on, we've all dealt with our own challenges,
Of course.
trying to navigate through the world. So there is a lot of overlap. I would say that there's a little bit of divergence too, not neurodivergence, I'm not, I'm saying, but it's like, it's a little bit of divergence too, because it kind of
Yes.
ties back into when people with certain neurodivergence, like ADHD, for example, okay, which I could attest to this, is when something grabs our interest and we dive into that rabbit hole, it is like we are focused. Like I don't come with an off switch. Like I have like I have I especially if something grabs, and it's unpredictable. I don't know what's going to grab it. It just does. And now, I mean, obviously, medicated now, I have way more control. But before, most of my life, it was on, undiagnosed. I would have no idea. But I would sit, and I've stayed up till 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, looking like deep diving into like knots and UFOs and stuff, like really into like weird like niche areas, like creepy spots on the internet, right? Like dive into it. So I would, but again, with medication, able to have more control over it. So when, ADHD people, for example, can turn the on switch on, and they can go. That gives them a superpower almost. And that's where, again, when
Absolutely.
we tie back to that extreme, that extreme level of hyperproduction, 140% higher. So I think it's important to see, like, because that's kind of a divergence. It's a
Absolutely.
portion. Okay. So do you think there's any challenges that are specific to the neurodivergent population that maybe the broader disability inclusion conversation hasn't fully caught up to yet?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is going to come to understand kind of what you were just speaking to. So understanding how that community tends to work, understanding that there are complexities, that one person with ADHD is not living the same version than another person with ADHD is. There may be some similarities, but they are two completely different people who have two different lived experiences. And their stronghold on some of their skill sets can be extremely productive for companies when they are focused and put in a very successful, intentional position of using those superpowers, as you like to call them. So I think that's one thing is people understanding how to leverage those, we'll call them superpowers, in the right way, right? Because I think people see them as a negative connotation instead of saying, well, if this person is hyper-focused and we need research done and they love research, like why would we not put them in a position where they can just deep dive and spend 8, 9 hours a day kind of going through specific information? That being said, If people don't start to stand up and take notice of the community as a whole, and then specifically neurodivergence, I think they're going to be missing out on a lot of really talented folks. I think that at the end of the day, when we look at the numbers that I shared with you a little while ago about the sheer numbers that are coming into the workforce that are neurodivergent or identify as neurodivergent, that's like more than half of the population, you know?
Right.
So why would you not stand up and take notice and try to figure out ways to leverage these superpowers in your office spaces, in your teams, in your companies? So for me, it's kind of like it's common sense, but I don't think that necessarily everybody understands how to leverage those just yet. And I think that's something that a lot of employers and workplaces are working towards, but they may not have fully figured out yet. Now, I think a lot of the tech space has done a great job of it.
Right.
And they embrace a lot of it, but I think outside of that, it's kind of like little pockets where you'll see companies doing great work in this space. Others just haven't figured it out yet. Not because they don't want to, but they're just not there yet.
I understand. It's I thought of something while you were mentioning that it is, when the focus is on, I don't come with an off switch, but the second it turns into a chore, like it crosses over this invisible threshold where it's just the interest isn't there, and then it becomes a chore, and then I don't want to do it, and then the hyper focus isn't there, and I worry about some of our neurodivergent brothers and sisters that would be out there in a in a position, and then they're just not performing the same way. They might get burnt out. They might just be, and then their leadership's going to be like, what happened? You just like did a did all this production last week, and it's nothing is like, as soon as the task becomes boring, okay, an ADHD mind is just going to shut it down. Like they have no, it's just is what it is. So I think it's important to to include that, to realize that, yeah, some of your some of the workforce might engagement might waver depending on interest. So it's just something to keep, just something to keep in mind with it.
And I think that that's going to go with the human race in general, because I think that we're all, when we're put under task for too much for too long, specifically ADHD, that you do become burnout. I mean, I think that's human nature, because your brain can only take so much taxing for so long. One of the things I think is really helping in this area, specifically with neurodivergence, is using AI, right? It's helping them stay kind of on task, if you will, automating things for them. Maybe they're really not good at summarizing things that happen in meetings, so being able to access those notes and summaries that come at the end of those meetings. And it's helping them, and not just them, their teams, the people that work with them, how they communicate, how they connect with their fellow peers. So I think that there's something to be said for that, and the way it's starting to be utilized more and more in the workspace around specifically neurodivergent. I know millennials are kind of the community that's currently impacting, but as the future generations come forth, I see it being something that's going to be leveraged more and more.
Absolutely, I think that's really great. And talking about like leveraging more and more as we're moving forward, when you look at inclusion and accessibility and is where we're headed over the next 5 to 10 years, what's your honest read? Do you feel like we're on the right track?
I think we are. I think there's always going to be bumps in the road, and I think there's always, again, going to be those people that are going to say, no, the sky's purple, it's not blue. And again, that's part of human nature. But I think that technology is really kind of helping lead the way, right? So we're living in a place where AI and really emerging technologies are transforming how businesses operate, how our dobies are running their businesses, how college graduates are leveraging applying for jobs, how the average American is living their life. And I think it's something that's becoming more and more embedded in our day-to-day lives, not just personally, but professionally. And it's really helping production, it's helping scale innovation. And I think for the most part, yes, there are some negatives to AI. I think most of it is really positive when we talk about inclusion. And we're starting to do a lot more work in this space around, how AI can help, and not just help with your general work, but also making sure that you're being inclusive of people with disabilities.
Right.
You know, which I think is really important, because you don't want to offend somebody unintentionally by some specific language that's pulled up by automated technology that there was not a human intervention in. So,
Right. It's Well, that's a big part of the AI conversation. It's because AI is obviously very skilled at what it can do. But so many people are like, what about the human element? They want to keep it, injecting that human element into it, which I think is important, having, organic oversight over, these silicone brains that are starting to pop up everywhere. It's really, it's interesting. As far as where everything with the, inclusion and disability, and especially with this, wave of neurodivergent workforce is popping up over the next 10 or 15 years. Why do you see that's giving you hope? And honestly, what's keeping you up at night? What do you worry about with it?
So I think that, business owners in this space have they've started their own company for a reason, right? They either couldn't find employment where they were happy and successful, or couldn't stay consistently employed due to not having accommodations or due to their disabilities. And they're an extremely exceptional group of people. And I don't say that lightly. They're resilient, they're innovative, very ambitious, and they're really used to being told no. So they're kind of like the perfect mold for to be an entrepreneur, right? Because the word no doesn't bother most of them. So they have the drive to succeed and really become successful. And to me, that's just something that is next level. And so I think that's what really gives me hope. The people I work with, 99% of them are very positive, are really out there crushing it every day and trying to make a difference and be successful in their businesses. Keeping me up at night, there's not a whole lot that keeps you up at night, to be honest with you, James. I'm a pretty sound sleeper, but but I think for me,
Ambient.
for me, I think it's that sometimes my heart really hurts for business owners when they are struggling because I can't run their businesses for them, but I know that there is a personal tie. There's not a reason. They didn't just start a business to start it, right? There's a personal tie to why they started it, whether it was not being able to get gainful employment, or they just couldn't keep gainful employment, or maybe they just got sick of the 9 to 5 and marching to somebody else's orders, and they were miserable, whatever that is. And so you see these people out here who are literally like crushing it every day, but they're still struggling. And so for me, that hurts my heart. And I think that would be what, if anything, keeps me up at night because I know that what they're trying to do to get to that, and it's just taking longer and it's been much harder than it probably needs to be or maybe should be, So I think that for me is like the one thing.
And I just want to touch on something you mentioned about being told no. That's one thing that as a neurodivergent entrepreneur, especially with a startup, I have no problem being told no. But it's rare to get a straight answer like that. People will give you the soft no. Oh, we'll revisit this in 6 months. Oh, we'll do this X, Y, and Z. And it's not, they don't want to come right out and say no to your face, which I would appreciate that. I feel, my autistic side loves the black and white. By all means, let me do it, but don't try to sugarcoat something. Don't try to do that. If it's gonna be no, just tell us. And that's one thing that's been a little bit of a learning curve coming in. But that's another thing that touching back on the Adobe coaching, especially from other Adobes, who are have been there and done that. Neurodivergent business owners who have been in industry for several years and have been successful, sharing a lot of what they are, some of their knowledge.
And and honestly, when I have conversations with the professionals on the corporate side, when we're preparing them for matchmakers or events, just like we do with you guys, I think you know by now, James, I'm a very frank, transparent person. I'm not
No,
mean, but I'm very tactful, and I try to just
Cammy,
tell
no, you don't mean
it
that. No,
tell it how
no.
it is. We always do try to tell them because I'm always very transparent with everybody. We tell, we coach them to say like, look, if there's not an opportunity there, just tell them no. Just tell them no so they're not wasting their time and energy moving forward. If there is, then absolutely continue the conversation, but we don't need to like make this into a cupcake that it's not, right?
Right.
So just know and move on. Like it's not a big deal, So we do a lot of work in that space with trying to tell people, like, just be honest and upfront and transparent.
I love that. You do coaching with us and you do coaching on the other side too. That's great. So, speaking of matchmaking, the 2026 Global Conference is coming up, July 27th through the 30th in Dallas. For any listeners who haven't attended, can you tell us what it is and what makes it different from other inclusion-focused conferences?
First of all, I love our conference. This will be my 15th or 16th. I can't remember now. But it's really very much like a family reunion. Our conference is di different than other inclusion conferences, in the fact that it's fully immersed in a B2B focus, right? So we are all about business to business. We're not a typical disability advocacy type group, right? We bring business to the table. We bring value in our Dobies and our talent and our next gen, the tools and resources we provide. And for us, like, this is not a pity ask. This is a business imperative, right? These are things you need to know to be successful. And we've got these groups of folks who can bring these solutions and outcomes to your company, but you have to be willing to sit down and have a conversation, whether it's a potential employee or a potential company you're looking to work with. So for us, it's very business focused. You're going to see people from all different walks of disability. And since it's disability inclusion across the enterprise, that means it's not just hiring disability talent, right? That means it's folks that are coming in to understand how to make their spaces more accessible or their technology more accessible. Or maybe it's having a conversation, understand an accommodation request or how that works from an HR perspective. That also means networking and learning more about our Dobies and SDV Dobies who have the scale and scope to potentially work with your company. So there is a lot of different aspects of the business across the enterprise that go on during this conference during the week.
I love that. And I'm ex excited to be attending the first ever conference
You'll
this
love
year.
it.
We'll see. I get I this is one thing I wanted to ask about, because I was specifically, as a neurodivergent business owner, I struggle with crowds. And that's one thing where I had been liaisoning with another autistic business owner who's gone to several of these, and he was like, you got to get your hotel room and you have to have your spot to go deflate, because it is a lot of social interaction and a lot of these stop and chats, and it's a lot of, so it can be overwhelming. But I wanted to ask you about specifically for neurodivergent or even any disabled business owner hearing about this for the first time, what would you say the number one value is of being in this room? And what and how would they go about getting involved, or how would they attend? Like, how can they sign up for this?
So first, kind of what to expect on who's going to be there and what they would get out of it or what's the value being in the room. We've got everybody from HR, talent acquisition, accessibility, marketing, legal, procurement, supplier or business inclusion, sustainability, and many, many more categories that typically attend the conference. So it really is made up of a lot of our corporate partners. So Fortune 500 and 1000 companies will have representation there, maybe not across every unit, but some unit, right? Maybe one, two, some of them will bring people from across their entire enterprise. Anyone who attends, again, to your point, needs to be ready to talk, have conversations, engage in conversations and networking. I would also say be willing to listen and ask questions because there's so much that you can get out of your time on site. But you have to be willing to ask the hard questions, even when it feels really uncomfortable to do so. So if you're having a conversation with somebody and you say, like, I would love to continue this conversation, can we connect later? Making sure you connect and get that person's information, especially for somebody that gets overly stimulated. And while I don't have ADHD, I'm not considered neurodivergent, I very much am running for the hills by the end of my day because I have been talked out and I have no talking left to do, James. So you are not alone in that. So for our neurodivergent specifically, or our disabled business owners who are going to be there for the first time, I would say the biggest thing that I would do ahead of the arrival on site is to plan accordingly. So, like, review the agenda in advance, see what sessions you have interest in attending. Obviously, want you in the supplier inclusion ones, but based on what your company does, there may be some other sessions that make sense for you to attend. So, build out where you want to do, where you want to do, what you want to do each day, so that you can build in some like downtime or debrief time for yourself, quiet time, I like to call it. So when you build out like your strategy for the week, you are able to build in those little pockets where you're like, okay, for this hour, I'm going to go up to my room and take a breath and get away from all the human beings for just a little while so I can kind of get back together and I'm ready to kind of go back out there into the wild again and have more conversations. So I would say that's a huge piece of it. And try to make sure that you're building it around the things that are valuable to you because you don't want to miss those because you didn't take a break, right? So things like matchmaking, networking, whatever it is that's a priority for you on site, just make sure that you're building out your schedule that's going to support you in the best way possible for that week.
Absolutely. One thing I did want to touch on, this actually just popped up, and I meant to ask you this while we were talking about the criteria for joining. What's the timeline for becoming Adobe? Because anyone who is listening right now, they might get really excited about this conference this year. They're like, oh, shoot, I got to put in my application and do all this stuff before, this coming up to July. What do I, what do I do? What would you, do you have any advice for a entrepreneur in that same position?
Sure. So first and foremost, anybody can attend conference. You don't have to be Adobe, but you won't be able to do the matchmaking, certain other things that are only set aside for Adobe's, specifically because that's a benefit of being certified with us. The timeline for certification is typically about 75 to 90 days. Heather on my team, who leads that, is extremely efficient, and she gets most of them done in about 60 days or less. Now, that being said, not everybody's business application is as clean cut and as pulled together as others are. And so sometimes it will take a little bit longer to process it if it is a little bit more convoluted or complex than another application. So, typically 75 to 90 days. So if you're interested, you probably need to start like today.
Right. No, that's true. And I will say that Heather is awesome. Like when I was going
She
through my
is.
application, I didn't have there was a little bit of friction, but she was on point. I think I had to resubmit it a couple different times just for really minor, very, very minor easy fixes. But she was really, she's a really great filter because of the revisions I made when it went up to the committee or whatnot. It was, very, very, very easy. Also, the can we touch on the site visit right quick? That's another one that I didn't that we didn't mention. It was virtual when I did it. I don't know if you guys do in-person ones depending on, location, but it was a very, I had so much anxiety over it. So any of you guys who are putting in for Adobe application, do not worry about the site visit. They're awesome. They get it was actually the most pleasant part of the experience, I would say.
Well, glad to hear that first of all, James.
Right.
So the site visit is what we consider the middle step or the second step of the process. It is a three-stage process for most business owners. The first step is once it's submitted into Heather and she kind of gives it her little green flag, she'll assign it to our committee. It is reviewed by one person, maybe two. They're going to discuss, they'll vote on it at a committee meeting. And then it's either approved or to move to site visit or asked for further review. Maybe we've got some additional questions. So the site visit is, these are all volunteers, the people that do these. So typically, they either have a passion for entrepreneurs or small business owners, and they love doing this because they get to learn a little bit more about our network of businesses and folks that are coming to apply. Typically, the site visit takes about 45 minutes to an hour. It's very much like an interview in its intent. So we ask a lot of the same questions that are already laid out on your application. And again, we're going to ask the business owner or owners to be present and answer everything truthfully and to their best knowledge. Now, if there is like, a slip up or if you can't remember an exact number or whatever it is, you're not going to be dinged for it. It's not like a test that you have to pass. What we're doing is just looking to ensure that everything really, for the most part, aligns with everything you've shared in your application thus far and ensuring that, you are who you say you are. That's it, basically. So the intent is to not make anybody nervous, just for full transparency. But we do have to make sure that, this person is an actual person and that, they're a human being and we're not having the wool pulled over our eyes and so forth.
Right. I over-prepared. Like I have a home office. I wear, I got everything all nice. I moved my whole, like all this thing I got. Cause they're like, cause I did some research and they're like, yeah, sometimes you got to put it on the phone and they want you to walk around and look at all your stuff. So all the stuff I did to get it all set up, she didn't look at any of it. We just had a conversation. It was it. It was like really, it was very pleasant.
Yeah, typically they're not going to ask for
Right.
just somebody, I mean, interrupt you, James, for unless you're in like a warehouse or
Right.
manufacturing site, is typically when they're going to ask for like an actual view of everything outside of your office area.
I'd rather I over prepare like you know
Hey,
what I over
you're ready.
over analyze and just like I will get but it's rather I'd rather get too much than not enough, right?
I'm the same way, I get it.
Okay, so just need wrapping up. I want to ask what's one thing that you want neurodivergent and disabled business owners to know? Like anything, not even necessarily about disability and anything you want them to know.
Yeah, I would say, stay positive. The world we live in is incredibly demanding and demeaning at times, and people are just not very kind. So try to keep positivity as a business owner because it's not easy. Being an entrepreneur is not for the faint of heart. It is not for everybody, and the people that typically take it on that are successful are the ones that are ambitious, and they don't care how many times you tell them no. They're going to keep moving forward, trying to, make those connections, make those networks built, and really be successful. I would also say that, if you're interested in learning more about certification or getting involved in these certification programs, whether it's ours or somebody else's, that again, this is not a guarantee of business, but we do offer a lot of great resources and framework to help you collaborate with other business owners, corporations, government entities, and really fine-tune your business skills. And a lot of times folks that come in, like, they don't expect to be part of a maybe a larger community and to meet such great people. And that really ends up being one of the biggest things that I think a lot of people take away from being part of this program, whether they're with us for 3 years or they're with us for 13 years. So, it's I would say stay positive and really just kind of leverage your relationships wherever you can, whether it's certification, industry groups, your local network. You and I have talked about that. You got to leverage everything you can. It's a tough world out there.
Absolutely. So what's one thing that you would want the broader business community to understand about supplier inclusion?
Yeah, so I think there's this false misnomer out there that companies that have supplier inclusion programs or business inclusion programs have to do business with diverse entities, right? That there's these set asides that they have to use and they have to hire people or they have to work with companies that are whatever certified, whether it's minority, women, disability, veteran. And that's not true. There may be some of those in the government space, but collectively in corporate America, they may have goals in place, but they're not hard and fast things that they have to do. These are things they want to do and they're trying to reach. It's not a, I have to do this, regardless of whether you can do business with us or not. So I think understanding the complexities of like how this works, what the whole reason behind supplier inclusion is, knowing that you have a seat at the table to show up and compete is really what it's about. Not necessarily that it's a gimme, if you will. And I don't think that the majority of our business owners feel that way. They know they have value to bring and that's what they want to do. But I think for some folks, if they're not gonna, if they know they're not gonna get business out of it, they want nothing to do with it. And I've had direct conversations with some of our Adobes around situations like that. And it's unfortunate that they choose not to be part of the network because they feel like they're not gonna absolutely get business out of it, but that's their right as a business owner. So I respectfully respect that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so lastly, where can people find you, both disability and specifically the Dobie program?
Yeah, so if you go to our website, which is www.disabilityin, all one word, .org, you can also email me directly at Cami, Cami, at disabilityin, all one word, .org. Or you can just Google Disability In, and I'm sure that you can find us on there. But I know that if you listen to James and you reach out to him, I'm sure he'd be more than happy to give you my email address as
Absolutely.
well.
I'll drop it in the show notes, everyone. We'll have the links, everything.
That
You're gonna put your
would be
per
great.
the email on here too. We'll get it. Just reach out. Everyone, don't bother me. You're gonna have Cammy's email. Send it all her way. We're good. All right. Well, that's all the time we have this week. Miss Cammy, thank you so much for coming on. I mean, this is absolute honor to host you. Thank you so much. This is great. I honestly fantastic. Do you have any last words? Anything you wanna share with everyone before we go?
No, I mean, I just want to say it's been great to be on here today, James. Thanks for so much for having me. And I hope if you're interested in being part of the Adobe community, you'll reach out and connect with us. If not, know that there is a larger community out there that is really willing and able to support fellow, disabled business owners, and they want to. And that's really a lot of the folks that make up our community. I mean, Heather and I care a lot, but there are over 1,000 other people who are involved in this that really have just as much value as her and I do. So it's a team effort for sure.
All right, Cammy, thank you so much again for coming on the show. And I want to thank everyone for listening today to another episode of The Site Side. We'll be back next week with some more great content. Thank you again, everyone. Have a wonderful week.